Hello?
Eddie Vernofsky.
Yes, sir.
This is Jay Michaels. If I'm on the line, you're on the air.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
So congratulations. You now have a first, your first full-length. Is this your first full-length play going up at the Wednesday Repertory Company?
This is.
Now, is this your first play that you've written?
It's not exactly the first play that I've written. There have been a number of one-act plays and scenes that have gone up.
So this is your first full-length. This is your first play.
It is.
That is terrific. That is terrific. Tell us about Carcass. I came into the project late, so all I know is that there's a bull somewhere in there. And so share with us some of the bull on your show. Tell us about Carcass.
I will, and then I'll hand it over to Bruce, who's here as well. Maybe he'll have something to add.
Oh my goodness, it's an intervention. I got a lot of people on the line. There you go.
Hello, Jay.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. Great.
So the play is a story of a close group of people who are faced with reconciling with an event that happened to them. All, you know it or not, and choices they make in the present, and how, you know, a story of, I guess, in more words, someone searching for purpose and meaning in a life where this one individual is having a hard time coming to grips with wrong exactly. So something that I think everybody in some way can relate to is feeling unease and maybe not knowing why.
By the way, you wouldn't know this in any description, but it is funny.
It's hilarious. Everybody
There's
has
a lot of funny stuff.
Nobody actually.
No, but it is funny.
I'm glad you said that, because to hear it's about something coming to grips and in terms with, you're speaking very mysteriously. Is there are there plot twists that you don't want to let out? Is that why?
Yeah,
is that why we're speaking that way?
Yeah, I don't want people to know what happens, or else there's a reason to it. But you know, on the surface, it is a story. It's a story of a guy who goes on a journey to figure some stuff out, you know, like a physical journey to figure some stuff out.
Right.
And comes back, right? And so we're with him before and after, and the people that are closest to him. And sure, there are twists along the way, revelations about stuff in the past, revelations about what's going on in people's brains in the present, and moments that they're faced with and, you know, it's about seeing, I guess, ordinary people who are faced with the choice to do something in an extraordinary situation. And we see them kind of either attempt to or succeed or fail at trying to navigate these extraordinary situations as ordinary people.
So we're seeing us regular folk being faced with some unique situation that they wouldn't expect, and it ends up creating a self-examination. It creates a journey into seeing where they've been and where they're going.
Yes, and this,
which is not to say this is Bruce, but which is not to say that people actually get there. So it's, you know, not always successful.
Oh, my gosh. Nobody ever does. Nobody ever does.
I think that's a...
And also the journey that some people think they're on are not actually the journey that they're on.
And that's a really good... I'm so glad you said that. We're living in a world now that's so philosophical. We're looking back and saying, what did we as people, as a country, as a world did wrong, if you will, and how is it affecting our future? So by saying, you know, you're on one journey, but you're going to another place, it's quite brilliant. There's a line, I don't know if you know the show Doctor Who, it's my favorite British television show, and one of the characters turns to another and he says, you never take me where I want to go, and then the character says, no, I take you where you need to go. And it sounds to me like Carcass is doing that. It's showing us we choose a life. You know, what's the expression? Man plans, God laughs. So you're showing us
I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think that's what our hero sort of discovers at the end. And I think it is in, you know, it's really about that in many ways. The final, you know, moments of the play, I think, is fraught with self-discovery, actually.
Excellent. There's that line recently, and I got to pick it. Game of Thrones, where one character turns to the other and says, "Everything you have done has brought you here." So I guess this is a philosophical piece, and we're seeing how our journeys change and bring about our future, and a chance to really reexamine ourselves as people.
But I think also the philosophical aspects of the play are really subtextual. So you don't really sit there and feel like you're being bombarded at all with philosophy. It's just these, you know, five very insane people that are hysterical to watch and really interacting with each other. I mean, that's really, you know, what you're witnessing, and the philosophical stuff is obviously in there, but it's not something that we ever lead with.
The hopes is, I guess, that it's something these people, these archetypes, if you will, and their commotion that they're always in, as viewers, we can so easily relate to, that I think the idea would be that it leaves the audience confronting their own philosophies, right?
That's how you do it. And I think you're very wise to do that, because when you're confronted with it, you don't want to, but when it kind of sneaks up on you, that's where the learning lesson happens. So it sounds like that's also a major part of your plot,
right?
that you're watching one thing and then you're going to go, "Oh, I get it."
Well, the other day, actually yesterday, we had a couple of run throughs of the first act. Well, although it's not going to be act one and act two anymore, we've decided that we're actually going to run the play straight through.
Excellent. Good for you.
Minutes, hour, 25 minutes or so. But and I was watching what was the first act, and when we ran it through the second time, I could not stop laughing. It was really hysterical. And you know, when you've seen the play and read the play and been with the play for well over a year, and you know, I'm able to laugh, I think there's really something that's very interesting going on.
You learn something new every time you go through it.
Yeah, sure. Oops. Sorry, that's my stupid.
And now there's a musical number. This is great.
Yeah.
Eddie, let me grab you now, because now you're talking about this great philosophical journey, and this is your first full-length piece here. Now, you've had a very interesting trajectory to this point. You know, a lot of people, I've been a theater major and I did plays, da 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 da. You were a finance major. You were a pre-med. You were completely on the other side, and now here you are, a soon-to-be-produced author. Tell us about your journey. Tell us about Eddie, how he got here.
So I will try to be brief, although that's hard, right? Like anyone who moves to New York, you arrive and then you live 1,000 lifetimes. So where I guess the short version of before that is my brain was always confronted with math and science, you know, pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
It never really occurred to me to do anything else. Even as I was doing other things, right? You know, every activity one could think of, courtesy of my parents growing up. And then in college, it was just math and science and a good amount of extracurricular fun, I guess.
Of course.
Or just, you know, math and science and nothing, just because I could, right? So there was no real idea that pursuing something creative was a real thing until I had a phone call with a friend of mine, my buddy Alex. And something he said, so without getting into the explicit details of the conversation, something that he said, it just kind of thrust both of us into, like, I guess a sort of, it's like a movie moment, right? Where I'm on campus in my apartment, and a week later I was living in New York. And it literally happened like that. I went with a backpack, forgot all my stuff, had to fly back, get my stuff, go back to New York, and then just kind of started running around frantically trying to figure out what to do.
Wow.
Pretty much I just knew that I liked movies. So it wasn't that I moved here to do anything. It was that I moved here because I like movies and I didn't want to be a real person anymore. And what ultimately led me to being here was meeting Bruce, actually. So he directed this movie, this hilarious movie called Vampirifica. It was the end of the summer or the beginning of the fall that I met him in 2010. So a few months after I moved to New York. I kind of talked my way onto that set through a friend of mine. I was assistant editing. And Bruce and I hit it off. We were talking, and he said something that was the first notion I had of the idea that one actually can pursue acting. And so I reluctantly went and tried the class, his acting class, that is.
Right.
And it took a while. But a couple months in, something clicked, and it just seemed like the thing I needed to do. One of the few experiences I'd ever had to that point where, so I was doing a scene in class, and really, I mean, right now, it's the first time I can remember, other than occasional moments in sports growing up, where I did this scene, and I came out from the scene having basically blacked out for 10 minutes or whatever, huh. And it was the most meditative, incredible experience, and that seemed like something that I kind of needed to hold on to. So courtesy of Bruce, I got launched into this ridiculous pursuit, and kind of happened the same way with writing, where one day he was like, hey, just write something. And I was like, what?
do you think there's like a veil of autobiographical in your play? Because it sounds like you yourself, you know, on one journey suddenly discovered you're on another journey. Yeah, and then, you know, you had your own aha moments.
From a philosophical standpoint, I think that's unavoidable.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's in there. These people aren't me, and they're not explicitly anybody I know, but it wouldn't exist without the arguments I've had with my mom, you know?
There you go.
Yeah. Without the stuff I've heard my grandparents say, you know, without the friends I've had and the strangers I've met, I guess. So yeah, in a sense, it's autobiographical from a
philosophical. Very cool. Very cool. And you just gave it all up. You just said, okay, no more pre-med, and off to New York you went. And that's where you met Bruce Ornstein. Bruce, tell me about you. Tell me about the Wednesday rep. I want to make sure people really understand your company. It sounds like you have a very ambitious, very wonderful group with you, and I'd love to hear more about you and your company.
So originally, when I first started teaching a long time ago, like 22 years ago, along with directing and acting and all that, I really wanted to open up a master class, but I didn't really know how to do it because I was very constrained by the time factor in the studio that I was in, which I was teaching. Mm-hmm. And so finally I was able to open up a Wednesday class, which was my master class. And it was different from my other classes in that it was more of me being a moderator than an actual teacher. And from that was born the Wednesday Repertory Company. And we started producing stuff. And we'd actually started producing stuff before we were actually officially a company. And then mm-hmm. we became a company some years later and then started producing stuff, pretty consistently. Usually one-act plays. At this point, I think we've done probably 80 original one-act plays.
Wow.
And I'm very, very proud of the work. I say this all the time, I'm actually more proud of the work that I do with the writers, I think, than anything else because, you know, they're the ones that are creating this stuff from the get-go. And without them, we don't have anything. And the writing and the material, the last one-act plays, the group of plays that we did, which was literally 2 weeks ago, it's been doing this play back-to-back has been a strain on the company in a sense and a big strain on my marriage. My wife hates me now. But and my kids aren't too fond of me, but they're never too fond of me anyway, so that's okay.
There you go.
So we just, you know, took it upon ourselves to just do this. And we've done, as I said, something like 80 plays. And our last batch of plays were really extraordinary. I think it was the best evening that we've done so far. I always say that, but I really believe it. And I think we do extraordinary work in the company. And we started, you know, with Eddie's play about a year and a half ago. It was, again, born out of a series of one acts. And now it's this full length that we developed over time and developed with a series of readings and got a lot of input from people in the company and over glasses of wine and things like that. And finally,
we
discovered how to really kind of put this together. And so I think we have something really, really special. I really do.
What's the future like now? This is your second full length play with the Wednesday Rep that you're doing, the second one that you're producing. Are you looking to add full lengths as more of an expectation within the company, or are you going to stick to the...
So in the fall, we have another one that we're slated to do. Then it's really up to the writers to keep writing. And so I've challenged the company and people in the company to start writing full lengths. It's not actually I've directed out of the Wednesday group other full lengths, but it was before we actually became an official company. There's a woman named Amy Whitting who's now sort of making her bones as a writer. She'd never written anything before either until she started writing monologues in class about her boyfriend's suicide, which then we turned into a one act, which then later became a full length. So I've been doing this for a while, really sort of, I guess, helping writers to really kind of find their voice. I mean, I really enjoy that. And, you know, and it's just carried through until today. So it's great.
Do you think that's like a natural progression? Tennessee Williams used to do that. Mooney's Kid Don't Cry was a one act that eventually became Streetcar Named Desire, or at least they say it was the foundation thereof. Do you think writing the monologue, writing the character, writing the one act, and then the full length is like the proper trajectory, if you will, in writing a play?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that there are just so many different ways that one can go about the writing process, and it's very hard to pinpoint the right way to do it, or if there is an actual progression. In this case, it is, but in other cases, people plays are born, and they're born in all sorts of fashions and ways, shapes, and forms. So, you know, it just so happens that we do the one act form. I think we do the one act, short one act form as good as anybody. I really do. I honestly think that in New York City, there's no one that's really doing what we do in terms of one act. It's just a company consistently putting out good work. So it is a natural progression, I guess, for us when I say to someone, hey, you know, that could make a full length. And I just kind of say it offhanded, and then all of a sudden it becomes a thing. And now a full length is being written, and then all of a sudden it's being produced. So
that's great.
Yeah, it's just the way that I guess we do it sort of organically.
The one act is becoming de rigueur, if you will, because as you said, you're going to do your show without an intermission. Most plays now are 90 minutes or so, so they're almost a glorified one act. So it's interesting when you call something a full length that the one act seems to be taking over. So you were on the cutting edge long before it was a cutting edge.
Well, you know, the thing about short one act plays is they're different than the longer one act form in that it doesn't necessarily have a beginning, middle, and an end. It can just be a moment, and something happens. I think really the best one acts contain that moment and not necessarily that kind of linear structure. Mm-hmm. When you're dealing with full lengths, I think more than the short one act form, there is more of a linear progression. There is sort of a beginning, middle, and an end that I think, you know, people have come to expect. That's not saying all plays are linear, but generally speaking, there is a beginning, middle, and end when you're dealing with successful full-length plays. It's not the same with short one-acts.
Why is it the Wednesday Theater Company?
Because we started the master class on Wednesdays. Very simple. And no one knew what to call it. So someone said, why don't we just call it Wednesday Rap? And I went, okay, we'll try that.
You know, it's so funny. You come across as this very deep, very intellectual man. So I thought you go, well, Wednesday, if you look at the lunar calendar, then every Wednesday. And when you think about Shakespeare, and here you go, it was Wednesday we started. Brilliant, yeah. Brilliant, brilliant. Eddie, quick question to you now. This is your first full length. What is it like for you, and especially considering your trajectory into the arts, what's it like hearing your dialogue spoken? I speak to authors all the time, and I get so many answers. What was it like when actors sat down and read the words and spoke the words that you wrote?
It's a trip, man. It's it's very odd. I have a very hard time in certain ways taking myself seriously. And so I'm reminded that when other people are taking me seriously, there's something to think about, like in my relationship with myself, I guess. But it's weird. It's obviously an enormous compliment. People are putting a lot of time and energy into saying exactly the words I wrote in the order that I thought to write them in.
But of course, Eddie is in the play too. I mean, you know, he is the main character.
Oh, so you're in the play as well. Oh, perfect.
And so to say them not and not comment on the writing, right? As in the subtext, not comment on my own writing, not think about the lines, the dialogue, the whatever, just say the words.
Right.
But I'm the one who wrote the words, interact with other people who are saying the words, but forget where those words came from, to not expect the words before they come. It's a trip. Like I said, it's an extraordinary experience. It's one that the pursuit of acting and writing and all that is unlike many industries, one where you're not, moments of success aren't explicitly delineated, right? You just kind of go, and maybe at some point something happens. And so it's interesting to step back and think that maybe this is one such moment that a lot of people don't really get. And I kind of get it from a writing standpoint and an acting standpoint. And it's, now, obviously, I really owe pretty much all of this to Bruce. It's an extraordinary gift for me to be able to have this opportunity.
Well, thank you. But, Jay, speaking of which, our producing director is also in the show, Dan Williams, who I think you know.
I know Dan Lane very well, yes.
If we don't get to rehearsal, he's going to chew my head off. So we actually have to go to rehearsal right now. Otherwise, we're going to meet.
No better reason for me to say thank you so much.
Thank you. Go enjoy
the rehearsal. I will tell our listeners exactly where they can go see this phenomenal experience and the Wednesday rep, which is a phenomenal experience in and of itself. And gentlemen, I look forward to hearing wonderful things about the show. Thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you, Jay.
Ciao.